It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Friday, January 30th. I'm David Gura, in for Ben Johnson. Ross Ulbricht is accused of running the underground marketplace Silk Road, and during his trial, a prosecutor read some text to the jury, text with a smiley face emoticon at the end. How would you say that? Well, the attorney didn't. Ulbricht's lawyers objected, and the judge agreed it is important. Anne Curzan teaches English at the University of Michigan, and she joins us now. Hi, Anne.
Hello.
If you were reading a transcript and at the end of a sentence you hit a colon followed by a hyphen and then a closed parentheses, how would you read that aloud?
I would say smiley face.
So is that, do you think, common usage now? If we're reading these emojis aloud, at least if it's a smiley face, we're going to say it's a smiley face?
I haven't polled this, but I think that's pretty common. And I think there is an expectation that you need to address the emoticon, whether it's a smiley face or a winky face. It's there and it's relevant.
Are there examples like this in recent history? I think of the hashtag, which we now use to mean more than just that mark. It sort of has this Twitterific significance to it. Are we getting there with emojis? Is that something similar? Is the hashtag a model for this?
Well, we've seen in electronic communication that writers have taken symbols and started to use them for new purposes. We've seen this even just with the period, which now is sometimes used to signal either seriousness or even anger. So we're seeing a lot of symbols getting repurposed. We know that the asterisk is a way to fix a typo. Using all caps is a way to show that you're angry or perhaps sarcastic.
When you look at how we communicate, do you think that the emoji is doing something new, that it's lifting something different? Maybe in the past we would have to work harder, use our descriptive powers to convey that nuance.
I think that as writers, when we're now texting, we're facing a situation that we haven't had to face before. We're having a conversation, not exactly in real time, but close to real time, but we're missing all the context. And so we are having to find new tools as a way to try to clarify what we mean. Historically, in more formal writing, we had more time to write it out, make sure we weren't being ambiguous. Now we're expected to be quick.
Anne Curzan is an English professor at the University of Michigan who studies the history of language and communication. Anne, thank you very much.
Oh, absolutely. A pleasure.
A government employee admitted he crashed a small drone or quadcopter outside the White House this week. It didn't take long for DJI, the company that made the device, to respond. Spokesman John Resnick says new firmware will prevent DJI drones from flying within 15 miles of downtown D.C. It's called geofencing.
Geofencing is essentially the aircraft knowing its position and then being able to set up virtual walls from which it can't go past.
Using GPS, there are, Resnick says, already geofences around 2,000 airports, and he did not want to speculate about what happened Monday.
Ultimately, a user is ultimately responsible for whether or not they violate airspace, just as someone in a car is responsible for whether they violate a restricted zone.
That's John Resnick with drone maker DJI. It's Friday, time to play Silicon Tally. This week our guest is Kyle Wagner, a sports stats fan and a writer at Deadspin. And Kyle, are you ready to play the game where we try and stump each other with the week's tech news?
Ready.
All right, good. I've got a number for you. It is 2 jumps per second. 2 jumps per second.
I have no earthly idea. Is this in the NBA?
It is actually how fast Seahawks fans were jumping during the NFC Championship at CenturyLink Field in Seattle in the fourth quarter when their team's fates changed. And that's according to the Pacific Northwest Seismic Network. Evidently, people were measuring how big an earthquake. Is it an earthquake? A fan quake? So that's the number. You got one for me?
So these are 2.3, 3.1, and 3.9.
Okay, can you give me a unit of measure?
The first two are in miles, and the last is miles per hour.
Okay, this is as fast as the dog sleds can go during the Iditarod.
No, so this is Kevin Love this year. Kevin Love is not having the best season in Cleveland, but the NBA has this system called SportView, which tracks its players, and those numbers, 2.3 and 3.1, they're unchanged from last year, so there's a really obvious change in one of the best players in the league, or what we thought was one of them, and And this thing can't tell the difference of good Kevin Love to bad Kevin Love.
It's a machine. It's not feeling. Very good. Okay. I got another number for you. Over 100,000 activity trackers.
Is this Bitterant? Is this StarCraft?
Good guesses both. No, it is how many activity trackers have been sold by these two companies, Whistle and Tag, to track dogs. So this is like Fitbit for dogs. And evidently, people want this. They want to know the heart rate of their dogs, where they are, things like that. Anyways, you got another number for me?
One in 16,233. It has to do with the Patriots. We'll put it there.
It has to do with the Patriots.
So one in 16,233 is this phony number that's been going around the internet over the past week or so. This is supposedly the odds that the Patriots could be so successful at not fumbling the football. And the real number turns out to be 1 in 297. This is still a pretty implausible number, but it's more in the realm of, you know, possible, something that, you know, you wouldn't really raise an eyebrow about.
Kyle Wagner, staff writer for Deadspin, thank you so much for playing. It was great fun.
Thanks for having me.
I'm David Gura, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM, American Public Media.